accepted, and there is also a self-pay sliding scale. Kevin Elliott or his staff can be reached at 398-9066 or ELLIOTTCounselinggroup.com.
And you are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Disability Beat is coming up next, followed by Rootstock Radio at 5:30, and then at 6 o'clock, a rebroadcast episode of In the Know. So stay tuned for that and lots of other great programming here on WEFT this evening. And now, without further delay, here is Disability Beat. This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Reagan Carey of Charleston Transitional Facility and coordinator of a grant to provide person-centered decision-making and planning and employment options for high school graduates in Southern Illinois. But first, disability news for the week of July 8, 2019. With federal lawmakers slow to act, some cities and states are moving to bar employers from paying workers with disabilities less than the minimum wage. In the last few years, a handful of states and cities have banned or restricted the practice, and advocates say momentum is growing across the country. At least five states have pending legislation that would abolish the so-called sub-minimum wage, according to the National Association of State Directors of Developmental Disability Services, or NASDDDS. Ree Kennedy Lizott, Director of Employment Policy for that organization, said, quote, "I have seen the issue raised more than once to eliminate subminimum wage, but it's never gotten to this level of action," end quote. Opponents of subminimum wage say the practice is antiquated and exploitative. They say many people with disabilities are already living in poverty but want the opportunity for competitive, integrated employment. Some families argue that sheltered workshops where subminimum wage is commonly used provide a way for adults with severe disabilities to build their self-esteem and be productive. Research shows, however, that such segregated programs are ineffective at transitioning employees into the general workforce, according to the National Council on Disability. The recent movement by states began in 2015 when New Hampshire banned employers from paying subminimum wage, and Maryland followed suit in 2016. Alaska's Department of Labor ended the practice last year, as did Seattle. The city of Reno implemented a ban this year for city contracts, and in June, the governor of Texas signed legislation that will require state contractors to pay workers with disabilities at least minimum wage. This month, a Washington state law takes effect that prohibits state agencies from paying subminimum wage to people with disabilities. States with pending legislation include Connecticut, Montana, New York, North Carolina, and Illinois. Advocates say the changes are being driven by a variety of factors, including evolving expectations among people with disabilities, better preparation and support for employment, and Medicaid shift to home and community-based services that require integration in the community. Kennedy Lizott of NASDDDS noted that 47% of people with disabilities surveyed by the National Core Indicators, a collaboration that allows states to track outcome measures for people with developmental disabilities, wanted community employment. She said, quote, "We need to help people do what they're asking for. Subminimum wage jobs just don't make sense anymore," end quote. At the start of every school year, Jawanda Mast met with administrators at her daughter Rachel's school, and every year it was the same fight. Teachers wanted to separate Rachel, who has Down syndrome, from her peers without disabilities and put her in a segregated class. Mast always pushed back, isolating her daughter from her peers would have a devastating effect. Rachel was vivacious and social and loved to be with her friends. After years of having the same fight over and over, Mast made a hard choice right before Rachel was set to begin third grade. She and her family decided to leave their home in Tennessee for Kansas, where they could put Rachel into a school system that offered a better education and would include her in an integrated classroom. The family also made the move due to Mast's husband's job, but the education issues in Tennessee were a key factor. As a child with Down syndrome, Rachel is one of the small number of public school students in America with an intellectual disability. Experts estimate that up to 90% of students with disabilities can graduate high school, meeting the same academic expectations as their peers. But parents and advocates say the other 10% are often assumed to be less capable than they are. Just a few decades ago, students with disabilities faced high rates of institutionalization and were rarely included in typical classroom settings. In 1975, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act made these students' right to an appropriate public education into law. Part of IDEA's framework requires parents to advocate hard to get what they see as their child's needs met. Often, school districts have different ideas about what would best serve a child. Decades later, this is still the case. Sometimes teachers lack the best training for dealing with a student's specific disability. Other times, administrators have low expectations for what these students can achieve. While IDEA says students with disabilities should learn in the least restrictive environment, meaning with non-disabled peers, parents still often find themselves fighting hard, expensive battles for their child to be included. Mast is not alone in feeling that she had to move in order to get the proper support for her child. Four families of children with disabilities who were interviewed say they either moved in order to get their child better services or allowed their children's educational needs to factor into a move. They all ended up in places where they feel their child's unique and individual needs are met. It's not a luxury that every family has, however. Maryland parent Marjorie Golden has a 14-year-old daughter with Down syndrome. She fought for years and went to court to stop her district from giving her daughter certain assessments. The district needed these assessments in order to push Golden's daughter Rebecca into a graduation track specifically for students with disabilities. This track allows students to graduate with a certificate instead of a regular diploma. High school certificates don't carry the same weight as diplomas. They are not recognized by post-secondary institutions. 24 states have diploma paths specifically for students with disabilities. According to Rick Sabia, senior policy advisor at the National Down Syndrome Congress, quote, "People keep saying education shouldn't depend on your zip code. It's thrown around a lot in terms of kids in poverty, but it's also true for kids with disabilities. It shouldn't depend on your zip code," end quote. And finally, after a 3-year legislative and budget battle to increase funding for developmental disability service providers, the California legislature added more than $200 million in new state funding for the developmental disability community for this next fiscal year. In addition, the state will receive $200 million in federal matching funds, which will total over $400 million. This increase will address the minimum wage disparity and help nearly 330,000 Californians living with disabilities. Funds will enable service providers to continue their work and to provide resources to people with disabilities in gaining the tools and supports to become successful and productive members of their communities. Congratulations to the state of California for doing the right thing. Illinois has a long way to go. And that's the news and commentary for this week. And you are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander, and I'm joined today by my guest, Reagan Carey, who is representing a provider in the Charleston area, but actually statewide. CTF is all over the place. And so they have been the recipient of a big grant from the Illinois Council on Developmental Disabilities in recent months. And so I have Reagan on the phone to share a little bit of information about that program. So welcome to the program, Reagan.
Thank you, Vicki. Appreciate it.
So why don't you start out by introducing yourself to the listeners and then tell us a little bit about CTF.
Sure. My name's Reagan Carey. I'm the Associate Director for Specialized Services for CTF Illinois. I'm out of the Charleston area, but as you said, CTF Illinois is throughout the state. We provide support for people with disabilities, both at work and at home, and specifically for this, I'm overseeing a grant for the Southern Illinois Transition Project that's funded through the Illinois Council on Developmental Disabilities.
And this project is a fairly major one, correct? This is a three-year grant that you've received and a lot of big plans for this particular project.
Yes, absolutely. It's a three-year grant. We started last October, and it'll be running through September of 2021. The ICDD is funding the grant, like we said. It supports the development of systems change through advocacy and collaboration, creates opportunities and services for persons with developmental disabilities. So this particular investment is focused on transition-age persons, ages 14 to 30 years old, who have developmental disabilities.
Oh, okay, so up till 30. I was thinking that it was only for kids up until the age of 22.
No, I think that there's a great notice. Transition just doesn't end at age 22.
Oh, that's for sure.
Yes, and so this is a nice bridge into the adult services.
Okay, and so what are the big goals for this three-year grant?
Well, the major goal, is that 50 transition-age children will, because I guess we're getting a little bit older than kids, will gain access to successful post-secondary outcomes in the areas of education and training, advocacy, employment, and or independent living by building system and networks through the transition planning committees, new self-advocacy groups, and then also just increase people in Southern Illinois' knowledge and ability to navigate the developmental disability system of Illinois to obtain positive outcomes.
Sure, and that's a major, major shift in Illinois, if you can make it happen. So where do you even start?
Well, I've started a lot by just getting out into the community, trying to network with other providers. We've gained partners with the Illinois Association of Microboards, Eastern Illinois Area of Special Education, Family Matters, just to name a few, and just looking at creating a way for people to get the information they need to navigate. So that's students, that's parents, that's providers, and that's educators. Rather than just kind of working in silos, we're hoping through this grant we can help kind of bridge some of the communication, get some really good outcomes.
And I'm sure also using the resources of your agency to the greatest degree possible as well, right?
Absolutely. It's been very good that we're established in the community. CTF is on, I think, about 18th year as far as supporting people in Illinois. And so, building upon those relationships and then expanding it through other counties in Southern Illinois.
So what are the challenges that are most difficult in your region?
I think that there would be a couple. I think, first of all, there are so many different school districts, different places working separately with different ideas of what transition looks like. There are multiple different companies that are offering services, and just trying to navigate those systems and then getting people to communicate with one another. And also finding the gatekeeper to that. How do you get into a school system? How do you reach parents? how do you educate educators on best practice on transition and make sure that people are offered the support. I think the intent is there on, you know, in each of the areas. It's just a matter of getting the information to them.
And so when you're getting this information to the groups, and as you said, you're pretty early in this grant at this point in time. Next steps then, is that going to be to have meetings with all of the key players, or are you taking a one-on-one type of approach with them?
It really depends on the area. One of the big things that we put focus in is creating a transition planning committee in the Effingham area. That's done a very good job as far as bringing parents, educators, other providers of disability services together. Mm-hmm. So that will be continuing on throughout the length of the grant. Networking in regards to finding out and reaching out to heads of the different special education departments, the different high schools, and it's kind of a full-prong approach. I've been attending a lot of established meetings as far as for, like, the youth enforcement group in Effingham, the Transition Planning Committee in the Charleston area, just really trying to get the word out whenever possible, then creating an email list so that the people who do attend, we are able to keep giving them the information that they need.
Yeah, and keep them connected to what's going on and opportunities to get involved in future activities too, I'm assuming, correct?
Absolutely. That's the key, is that we want to give people the opportunity to be informed. Through this grant, we are looking at education for parents in regards to everything from guardianship to navigating the system to navigating the transition plan for their child. And also a huge push for self-advocacy and self-determination for people with disabilities and giving them the power to have their voice and have an understanding of what their choices are as they become young adults in the community.
Yeah, and you know, you say 50 people over 3 years, which ultimately is a drop in the bucket compared to how many people are out there. But I hear what you're saying. The goal is to put together a structure that will support this. And if you can place 50 people in things that are important to them in the next 3 years, you're changing it for everybody.
Absolutely. We really do want to look at a larger system change. You know, a focus of person-centered planning and bringing that in within the school system and the transition process. I think we just had a training or past training, which I'm sure you can explain more on. And I think it was very eye-opening for the educators to hear what could be asked of students with disabilities, what dreams they have, what could their focuses be, and how can we, you know, help them navigate so that their future is just as rich as any other student who's attending high school.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to me, having been involved in that area for a long time, is that a lot of parents who are good, strong advocates for their kids might even say to us, you know, I just never ask my adult child what they want in their life because I know it's not possible. Which
Absolutely.
Is, that's a horrible thing to hear, and it's a horrible thing to believe. But, you know, when you live in a state that underfunds people and underfunds programs, then that's the situation that you're left with.
Right, and we really need to have, you know, the educators and providers focus on people's strengths. So as a parent, you're able to hear what your child is capable of, not just what their deficits are. And focusing on those positive outcomes means that there's more positive opportunities. And really empowering the parents to ask and know what they can ask for. You know, as a parent, we're always given the parental rights at each of the individual education plans. But the idea of really knowing what you're able to ask a school district to provide to really assist on a unique journey into adulthood.
So when I introduced you, I identified this as a grant for Southern Illinois, but you're not serving the entire lower half of the state. What is the area that is in your service region?
Yes, we are going to be covering the following counties: Clark, Clay, Coles, Cumberland, Douglas, Edgar, Effingham, Jasper, Moultrie, Richland, and Shelby County.
And are there grants that are covering with similar type programs in other areas in Southern Illinois?
There are three other sites that were chosen. They're all unique to what the services they're offering. Some are focusing just on employment. Some are focusing on post-secondary education and that involvement. Ours is took kind of a more of a holistic approach, knowing that there is a bit of disparity in each of the areas.
Mm-hmm. Well, so there's no real coordination then among the four providers that are working on these different projects then at this point?
No, not at this point.
Okay. It'll be really interesting to see how that all turns out. And I, you know, just my personal bias is that the holistic approach certainly has a lot of advantages over, you know, ones that are more specific to employment or post-secondary education or any of that, because people don't always fall neatly into those categories.
That's exactly right. And I think I found that professionally and personally working within disability services is that it is a little messy, and it's hard to figure out what each person needs and to find the right services. But one thing I have learned over the years is there really are some good resources within our communities. But how do we get that information out? How do we help people navigate it? And that's what this grant is really helping focus on.
Have you begun to identify students, specific students that you're going to be focusing on, or is it still too early in the grant for that?
Well, we are starting self-advocacy groups within a high school every 6 months or thereabout at the semesters. And so this spring, we actually had our first self-advocacy group out of Mattoon, Illinois, mm-hmm. who attend the Life Academy. So we had 9 students who went through 5 different self-advocacy, self-determination courses that were offered by not only partners of the grant, but also co-presented by self-advocates who work at CTF Illinois in their advocacy program. So it was twofold, in that we're educating the students on their opportunities, helping with those areas, but also people with disabilities were also paid to work and offer these presentations.
That's great. And I know that CTF has had an advocacy self-advocacy program for a very long time. In fact, had one right here in the Champaign-Urbana area for a couple of years at least. Mm-hmm. And that just, the funding, I understand that the funding wouldn't sustain it, which is not a surprise in Illinois, but you know, there you go. There's an advantage that went away because of the lack of money.
Right. Our advocacy program in Charleston has been quite successful for the past 5 years. Keep building upon that, bringing them into, you know, this grant and other opportunities at any level that we can. And then also we have started one in Frankfort, Illinois, in the northern area.
Well, you know, that's one thing we didn't talk about. I identified your group as being from Charleston, but you really are statewide. So Frankfort is certainly not anywhere close to Charleston. What all other areas does CTF serve?
We are in the south suburbs as far as offering CILA arrangements, home-based services, and day training and employment services. Mm-hmm. We are in Lincoln, Illinois, in regards to our CILA services and just the CILA services there. We are in Olney area as far as CILA services and also day training and employment opportunities there.
Do you
we
have
quite,
go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. That's fine.
Do you have any hopes that this will be a impetus for change within CTF over, you know, the period of 3 years? Because, you know, they're doing a lot of progressive things, and, you know, but I don't think necessarily everybody at every agency is really on top of their game as far as progressive approaches to service.
But I think that through this grant, what we're doing is modeling best practice. And as far as being progressive, the expectations. So when I go to speak to groups, community groups, where other providers are attending, I'm able to say, we are doing this and it's successful. We're having quality outcomes by doing individual plans for people with disabilities and not just kind of a cookie cutter approach. And so I think that that influence, that talk, creating a culture of independence,
mm-hmm.
you know, is what really I think will be the largest influence that this grant has as far as CTF's influence.
Yeah, and I think that other providers will learn by your example as well, and that, you know, all these school districts and other providers that are engaged in the conversation only are going to learn through that. So I think it's very exciting, and I know that the Illinois Council on Developmental Disabilities is very, very focused on what's good for people. You know, they're very interested in those success stories. So I look forward maybe to having you on the program again, maybe in another year or two to, you know, give a little update and share some of the successes of the grant program. Which, does the grant program have a name? What's your name?
Just the Southern Illinois Transition Project.
So if anybody wants to get involved, get engaged with it, or, you know, attend some of your meetings, where would they go to get that information, Reagan?
They could email me directly at Reagan Carey, ReaganCarey, at ctfillinois.org, or my phone number is 217-348-3869, and my extension is 207.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for joining me. Is there anything that you didn't get to tell me that you wanted to add in before we're done?
Well, I just want to thank you for having me and exposing everyone to just a great project. And again, the Illinois Council on Developmental Disabilities is funding a lot of major things in Illinois and really pushing progressive action in regards to supporting people with disabilities, but also their self-determination and independence. There's a lot of things going on in Illinois that I think get looked past because of the negative. So thank you for really, you know, spotlighting some of the great things that are happening.
Yeah, they're doing a lot of great stuff, and so are you. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Vicki.
Reagan Carey of Charleston Transitional Facility. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email me at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week.
No, I stand my ground. Won't be turned around. Dragging me down, gonna stand my ground, and I won't back down.
And you are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Coming up next is Rootstock Radio, but before that, one announcement, and that is the Art Theater listing for this week. Screening daily is Midsummer, which concerns a young American couple whose relationship is on the brink of falling apart. After a family tragedy keeps them together, the couple joins their friends on a trip to a Midsummer festival in a remote Swedish village. A summer holiday in a land of eternal sunlight takes a dark turn when the villagers invite their guests to partake in festivities that change a cinematic fairy tale into a world of darkness. On Thursday, July 11th is Climax, when members of a dance troupe are lured to an empty school, drug-laced sangria causes their rehearsal to descend into a dark and explosive nightmare as they try to survive and find out who's responsible before it's too late. For up-to-date days, times, and films, please consult the website at theartheater.org. And now here is today's episode of Rootstock Radio. This is actually a rebroadcast. Rootstock Radio stopped airing live programs a couple of weeks ago, so we'll be replacing this with another program in the next week or